On Wednesday, April 9th, Simon Fraser University's Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies will host the roundtable discussion, 2S LGBTQI+ Youth, Challenges, Resilience, and Empowerment, where speakers including Dr. Melanie Gross will shed light on the most critical issues facing 2S LGBTQI+ youth in British Columbia today. Dr. Gross is a professional of social work and youth work in Germany and visiting researcher in SFU's Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies, studying differences in how 2S LGBTQI+ youth are perceived, treated, and supported in Canada and Germany. I'm Jesse Wenzloff, and I sat down with Dr. Gross for this conversation, where she explains how the situation for 2S LGBTQI+ youth in Germany lags behind Canada in some areas, how recent changes to German law are addressing this gap, and how the global rise of conservative political parties across the world is threatening these gains. Here's my conversation with Dr. Melanie Gross.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the invitation. My name is Melanie. I'm a professor in Germany, in northern Germany, and I'm teaching students in the field of social work. I focus on youth work, and coming from gender studies with my PhD thesis about gender, queer, and resistance, I do very much focus on gender, sexuality, and LGBTIQ+ youth in Germany. And I know that we are mixing up with the words. So in Germany, we say LGBTIQ+. That's the community-based acronym that we use. But here it's a different one. So probably I will mix them in my answers to your question.
Sure. Understandable. Thank you for joining me this morning. It's lovely to have you in studio.
Thank you.
I've invited you in studio because you're participating in an event that SFU's Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies is putting on April 9th. But what led you to your field of study?
Yeah, my experience in Germany about integrating those topics like LGBTIQ+ youth into social work is still a challenge. And I'm very interested in comparing the situations of queer, trans, and intersex youth in Canada and in Germany, and here especially about how those topics are dealt with in social work. I'm still learning a lot about it. There are some similarities, some differences. And the other topic I'm working on is domestic violence and gender-based violence in Canada and in Germany. There's also, what I learned, some different terms. As I get it, in Canada, you're speaking of intimate violence and partnerships. We still speak about domestic violence in Germany and gender-based violence. And in this topic, I'm especially interested in the procedures between youth welfare, police, and victim protection, especially in those high-risk cases. So I do both topics here, and to this end, I mostly hold talks with experts and from academia or from social work. I visit organizations, and sometimes I take part in courses at SFU.
Why did you choose to come and do this research here at Simon Fraser University?
Yeah, to me, the department, GSWS, brings together a lot of experience that helps me in my research. Those issues relating to gender and sexuality are fundamental to social work in Germany. And I wanted to take the opportunity to spend another few months focusing exclusively on gender issues. And the department is really a wonderful place to do this. For me, SFU also symbolizes the ideas of education that I admire so much in Canada, a great openness to questions of diversity and greater equal opportunities for young people. From my point of view, this is the fundament of democracy, and democracy, as we see today, is attacked.
You're obviously in the process of doing this research, but do you have any insights from your work with LGBTIQ+ young people in Germany that either resonate or contrast to or differ from what you've seen here in Canada?
Yes, it's in progress, but I can see that there are many similarities and many rather small differences in the details between Canada and Germany. I do recognize that the current situation of 2S LGBTQI youth in Canada is also very challenging, as it is in Germany. Yet I see a difference in the way Canada takes diversity for granted, and we can learn from this in Germany. One difference is that we have youth work in every city and every municipality in Germany, thanks to a federal law. These are often youth centers that are spaces where young people can spend their free time as they wish. And we can use these structures to offer LGBTIQ plus young people support and safer spaces. Those youth centers are also providing, for example, recording studios, instruments, band rehearsal rooms, table football, pool tables, woodworking, or simply sofas to relax and chat. And if I understand correctly, there is no such structure in Canada.
Yeah, I would say in Canada, those sort of facilities for youth, if they are provided, are sort of through a school is more likely instead of an outside organization.
Yes, and in Germany, it's completely independent. On the other hand, Canada is well ahead of Germany when it comes to thinking about intersections. The critical debate about white privilege, for example, seems to be much more advanced here than in Germany. In Germany, it is advanced in science and in academia, but not in social work. So we have very separated programs in social work, like one for refugees and one for queer and one for girls. And as I see, you're getting these parts more together. That's one thing. And also, I find it very interesting, for example, what Travers from SFU or Elizabeth Savick from UBC are doing with their focus on parents. In Germany, we are not yet as far advanced in terms of educating parents. They are educating parents in order to strengthen the resilience of young kids, queer kids. And I have also not yet seen a comparable analysis of the importance of parents for social change in relation to gender diversity. So that's quite interesting to me. My impression is that we in Germany have by no means realized all the possibilities of support for LGBTIQ plus young people and women's rights, and already confronted with an expected backlash. What we are seeing now is how quickly rights that have been won in democracies can be dismantled or called into question. And I want to learn from other countries, and I also want to create international synergies.
It's interesting that you bring up the education of parents and the protection and attack on rights, because here in Canada, in BC in particular, there has been a lot of debate, a lot of sort of political dialogue about, in particular, what's called SOGI here, sexual orientation and gender identity education. And there has been a real debate about what children should be taught, how they should be taught, when they should be taught, these ideas around sexual orientation and gender identity. And there's a big fight between sort of the science or peer-reviewed and backed idea that we should be teaching children about sexual orientation and gender identity at a fairly early age and talking about all the differences to normalize them, with this generally aligned with conservative beliefs that that's not the case. And that once the new SOGI curriculum was implemented, it became a big political issue because there was a lot of pushback on that. And I think you can link that directly to where politics are on the issue of queer rights and trans rights and all of that.
Yeah, right. And it's very interesting because Germany is also a very polarized society in these topics. Maybe if you compare the situation now to the situation 20 or 30 years ago, then you see that the current situation is really different. Back then, those kids, transgender young people, were still less visible or non-visible at all. And intersexuality was completely unknown to most people. So that changed. Young people are becoming more visible and courageous in their diversity. They are taking up spaces and quite rightly expect equal rights. And at the same time, they are also experiencing massive attacks, as you mentioned, from, in Germany, it's from influential right-wing networks and think tanks, and unfortunately also from conservatives who seem to feel like threatened by the increasing openness and diversity. So this in itself is not a historically new development, but it is unfolding a different, new, and also dangerous dynamic as societies move further to the right. And the attack on LGBTIQ+ and on women's rights becomes a strategic part of right-wing propaganda. Obviously, not all democratic forces have yet realized that our democracy is only as strong as our guarantee of the integration of minority rights into society.
Yeah, it's becoming increasingly clear as events unfold, particularly in America is where it seems most visible, but certainly across North America and across the world, we're starting to see, well, not quite the end result, but the later stage results of this dehumanizing language and rhetoric and this sort of dismissal of the validity of non-traditional heteronormative identities and relationships.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. These are some of the challenges facing 2SLGBTQI plus people and particularly youth across the world. On April 9th, SFU's Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies is hosting an event called 2SLGBTQI plus Youth Challenges, Resilience, and Empowerment. You'll be speaking at that event. What can you tell me about the event generally?
Yeah, in this event, we will discuss the current challenges young 2SLGBTQI plus people are facing right now. So as we are speaking, they often experience discrimination and rejection on the street, at school, at work, at university, from their peers and also from their parents. They do live in a world right now in which homophobia, transphobia, and misogyny are on the rise and threaten the achievements that already have been made in society, in law, and also in health. And we want to develop in this event visions for the creation of spaces of empowerment and strategies for strengthening resilience. So I'm very pleased that I was able to invite great colleagues to this event from SFU, from UBC, and also from the organization community to contribute their experience and expertise to the discussion.
Yeah, I think as someone who is straight cis white male, grew up never having to worry about hiding who I was, or if I did, it was, you know, because I was a nerd or whatever. It was nothing that was potentially life-threatening, right?
Yeah.
Or could have my family ostracize me or whatever. So I think having an event like this where even just raising the awareness of that in the public mind is really important.
Yeah, thank you. We hope that we will come to some perspectives maybe that will help. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What can attendees, people who come to the event, what can they expect to experience while they're there?
We will do two-part events. So in the first part, we have six speakers, including me. We will all give like 8 to 10 minutes. Very short insights into our work and perspectives. And this will take 1 hour. And on the other hour, we like to discuss also with the attendees about, the topics that just came up in this discussion and through those small talks.
Right, so there's a participatory aspect as well. That's great. Why is it important to focus on the experience of young 2S LGBTQI plus people specifically?
Yeah, maybe we can talk about a little bit of their experience and their youth still. They do still experience a great deal of discrimination in Germany, and as I see also in Canada. In Germany, we see that trans, non-binary, gay, lesbian, bisexual young people experience not only discrimination, but also a lot of violence. And they experience that everywhere. There are no spaces which are free of those discriminations. And they are in public spaces, in institutions like schools, universities, administration, social work, youth work also, sports clubs, families, neighborhoods, in their private spaces, and also in health and medical systems. And intersex youth, for example, experience a lot of pathologization and still very much tabooing, so that it still seems like they don't exist, but they do exist, of course. What we see in the few studies that we have in Germany is that those experiences can and will lead to a variety of problems for young people. Most mentioned is loneliness. That's a great topic, big topic, and a big, huge problem. It's followed by feelings of isolation, insecurity, and depression. Also very often mentioned are eating and sleeping disorders, anxieties, and feelings of guilt, lack of self-acceptance, and the avoidance of social situations. They also report like learning and concentration issues, especially in schools, and alcohol and drug abuse. We do have a huge problem with hidden homelessness. This is a result of the abuse, neglect, and abandonment those young people experience by their parents.
Can I just ask, what makes it hidden homelessness?
In Germany, homelessness does not exist officially, because we have a social support network and social work, so that homeless youth shall not exist. But obviously, young people leave their parents or are kicked out from their families, and they do like couch surfing or visiting friends, stay here and there for a while, because they want to avoid the system of social work, some of them, not all of them, but some of them. So that a significant amount of people, young people on the streets, are queer people. And it exposes them to the risk of sexual violence and to people that take advantage of their vulnerable situation and precarious situation. So that's a dangerous situation for them. And also what's really alarming in Germany that we have a highly increased risk of suicide. So it's 4 to 6 times higher than in cisgender heterosexual adolescents. And in addition, they all have to overcome the challenges that make adolescence difficult for all young people. So it's coming on top to such problems like low self-esteem, identity, searching and crises, autonomy conflicts, arguments with parents and friends, and so on. And from my point of view, this is exactly where social work has to or must start and support young LGBTIQ plus people. We have an international definition of social work, and this definition says that, I quote, "Social work promotes social change and development and the empowerment and liberation of people. Principles of social justice, human rights, collective responsibility, and respect for diversities are central to social work." So we have to do something. And in Germany, we have been able to achieve some changes in the last years.
What are those changes?
What I'm addressing the most is that we have not only social but also legal changes for LGBTIQ plus young people in recent years, which provide an important progressive framework for social work. So in addition to enabling same-sex marriage, that was very late in Germany, 2017, the civil status law has been reformed. So now the state does recognize that in addition to female and male, there's also the category called diverse, which addresses intersex people. That was a very big step for Germany. Also, it is particularly important for social work with children and young people that the last federal law reform in 2021 changed the child and youth welfare law and system so that it now addresses not only girls and boys, but also transgender and intersex young people. So all child and youth welfare services and all structures in every youth center we have has to address all of the youth. So non-binary, transgender and intersexual young people. And that's quite new because since the 90s, in the beginning of the 90s, the law only addresses girls and boys. It was progressive in that time because social work was very much addressing only male youth. And then this law says, no, you have to also see girls. So it was the law was written in a way that it always mentions boys and girls.
Right.
And now it also mentions transgender, intersex, and non-binary, and that's really a big step.
I think that's a really good example of how, in order to change opinions, to change attitudes and the way people act and think about gender, sexuality, people have to make those changes in their minds.
Yeah.
But the importance of sort of leading with legislation, or the importance of legislation in that case, where it then allows a profession that is bound by specific laws to then do the work in a way that protects and serves the people who are now explicitly sort of named. Similar to gay marriage, where it's like, oh, well, okay, great. Gay marriage is allowed. Okay. That also sends a message and allows for the society itself to recognize and acknowledge the existence of gay people or intersex people or trans people or whatever the case may be.
Yes, and it also empowers them to just ask or make clear that they have rights and that they have to be seen in social work. You cannot talk about we're taking care of children and young people and just ignore the diversity in this group. So that's a very big and a very good changement. But what we see is that those changes, those legal changes, always depend on political majorities. And this is a situation now in Germany when we can come to big backlash right now. So we had more than 16 years conservative government, mostly conservative, also social democratic, but the major group have been the conservatives. And then we had now 3 years a green, social democratic and liberal government. And in this 3 years, there was another act, a new act coming. It is the Self-Determination Act that passed in parliament and that enables people to change their gender entry without complex and really questionable human rights processes. But now, after the election, they are creating the new government right now. They always have to build coalitions between parties, and now we have again the conservative and the social democrats, and now they are discussing again if this act will stay or if they just want to eliminate it. So it's a dangerous situation, and it really puts the community in a mode of being alarmed and be feeling insecure. And it's a big backlash coming, probably.
That does, unfortunately, seem to be the way things are going on a global scale, right, with the rising conservative power. Yeah. I'm sure this and other topics will be a big part of the discussion, the roundtable on April 9th. Is there anything else you think that I or our listeners should know about the event or your work?
I think the most important thing to me right now is that a lot of people like to participate in this event or in any other event like that, and getting to discussion those about those topics, creating spaces and building empowerment together. So maybe in academia, maybe in social work. So we have to, we're not allowed to take it for granted. So we have to fight for human rights. So that's, I think that's something that drives me a lot.
Mm-hmm. I've heard it described that democracy is not just a thing or a given, it's a practice. It's something that we have to be working on and working
every
for
day.
Every day.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time to chat with me today, Melanie.
Thank you so much.
The event 2S LGBTQI Plus Youth, Challenges, Resilience, and Empowerment, featuring Melanie, as well as Jen Marchbank, Travers, Elizabeth Sewick, Emily Todd, and Antoine Coulombe, is Wednesday, April 9th. And you can get tickets at Eventbrite, but they're going quickly, so grab them as soon as you can. That was my conversation with Dr. Melanie Gross, a professor of social work and youth work in Germany and visiting researcher at Simon Fraser University's Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies. On Wednesday, April 9th at SFU Harbor Center, room 1520, she will be one of the speakers at the Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies event, 2S LGBTQI Plus Youth, Challenges, Resilience, and Empowerment. For CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, I'm Jesse Wensloff. This interview is made possible by funding from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative and can be found online with stories from across the country at frequencynews.ca.